And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. I am talking about this one. I'm talking about Alabama. Don't argue with me. It's Alabama. Y'all, this show goes like way down south of Birmingham, up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and even Mississippi, all thrown in just for good measure. A couple more text messages before I move forward. Ken from Harvest wants to know, was Sleepy Joe speaking out of turn, or was it to sabotage Kamala? Ken, that is the million-dollar question. In fact, I believe I'm going to ask that question during Butters and Lee. What are you thinking? I see you sidling up to the microphone over there.
Oh, well, I think, so the Ron DeSantis thing and stuff like that of them scheduling events on top of each other,
yeah.
I think that's on purpose. This one just kind of seemed like Joe being the, like Obama said, crazy Uncle Joe that kind of just speaks out of time. I genuinely think that's just, he got, you know, he just got his foot in his mouth again. And so maybe this exact instance maybe isn't, you know, him trying to step on Kamala, but nevertheless, that is happening in many different cases.
But here's the thing, too. Last night, Charlene and I were talking about this. And here's my thought. Because if you watch Kamala, she has the opportunity to distance herself from him. She has the opportunity to go, well, no, I don't believe that. Or I don't know why the president would say that, but then he's his own person. And I mean, she could have done any number of things along the way to try and, you know, put a little bit of a bright line between her. Even to the point of when she's asked, what would you do different? Well, I don't know there's anything I would do different. Here's my thought. I think to get Joe to step aside, Kamala had to make a deal. I think that they've got something on her. And I'm pure speculation, and I just caveat it all by saying pure speculation. I think they've got something on her, and she had to make a deal that nothing I say during the campaign will in any way diminish or disparage your legacy or who you are as president. And because he wants to retire and build his library and go off to his beach house and enjoy life. And I just strongly feel like there's a deal that's been made, and that's why she won't separate herself.
Well, also, too, anything bad she says about Biden's presidency, I mean, she's directly alongside him. So it's almost like a caveat of you can't be careful what you bash about Biden's administration because you're the VP and you claim to be the last in the room to make decisions. So that's kind of your, you know,
absolutely
your quote accomplishments, too, or quote failures, too. So she's in a rough spot of. If she can't claim anything that she thinks is good because then they're going to go, oh, wait, well, then you're the reason that inflation is so bad and you're the reason why this is so bad. So I think that's part of why she's, for some reason, she won't distance herself from him. I don't know what
I think a deal's been made, man. Bruce from Springville, good comments, by the way. Bruce from Springville says, the weapon that is more powerful than the nuclear weapon used in warfare that has inflicted more injuries and death is that thing that flips up and down in one's mouth. Yes. Yes, it is. Book of James is a lot more about the tongue than what I quoted. And I mean, it even talks about how a bridle in the horse's mouth can turn the entire horse, that the small rudder on the back of a ship can turn the entire ship. And so the tongue can set things on fire. David from Bucky's says, Phil, not only does down ballot matter, but as to state issues up for vote, Amendment 1 is to be voted on. He said, but I must not be educated because I'm not sure what it is and actually does. Can you shed some light on Amendment 1 for me and probably other right side ruffians? David, your timing is impeccable. It's absolutely impeccable. So that's actually on my list. Let's just do that first. I'll just talk about it. So there's a lot of discussion right now. How much time I got? I got good time. There's a lot of discussion about, you know, what's on the ballot. And I can't tell you how many times I have literally been, you know, on election day and had somebody call me and they're saying, Phil. Hey, I'm in the voting booth. What do I do about Amendment number 3? Because it's, I mean, you look at them and listen, while I was there in the Alabama State Senate, we even passed a clear language bill that required them to be written in clear language. And I swear they're not. I just don't think for a second that people who write ballot language talk like real people. That being said, what is Amendment 1? Okay. So I'm going to give you a lengthy answer. Because that's what I do. I got 3 hours to fill. But here's the thing. When we go down to Montgomery during legislative session, I say we, I'm not there anymore, but you know what I mean. When the legislature goes into session and they're enacting the laws And sometimes all they're doing is modifying existing law. Sometimes they're passing new and unique law. And other times they're passing things that are called constitutional amendments, and those require a vote of the people. But there's also two kinds of bills. There's bills of general statewide application, and those are the bills that, like, I don't know, change the laws related to what the penalties are for murder, or the laws about, you know, how to spend certain monies. Anyway. But then there's what we call local legislation. Alabama's got a constitution that is very cumbersome. It's the longest constitution in the world, believe it or not. The longest constitution in the world because it has so many amendments, because the way it was written does not allow a lot of what we call local controls. So home rule is not a big thing for Alabama. Most of it's centralized in Montgomery. Anytime something would happen, like, for instance, in my district, the local delegation, we had a thing called local legislation. You'd bring a bill. You go, you know what, fellas? We got a thing happening, and we want to name a road, or we want to do a thing that, you know, we want Sunday alcohol sales or whatever the case may be. Believe it or not, you have to go to Montgomery and get approval. So the local delegation, in this case, Franklin County, Amendment 1, Franklin County, a Republican, Jamie Keel, a Republican from Russellville, he put together a local bill. His local delegation all agreed on it. They took it to Montgomery. The legislature, usually, typically speaking, once a local delegation says, this is what my area needs, everybody else kind of gets out of the way, unless they're raising taxes or doing something stupid. So they passed their local bill. But because this one requires a constitutional amendment, it has to go on the ballot. And believe it or not, even though it's local to Franklin County, it's changing the state constitution. So it requires local application with general resolution. All right. That being said, everybody in the state is going to vote on Franklin County's amendment number one. What is it? Here's the bottom line. I picked up a piece from WHNT out of Huntsville. All this is, and listen, if it was a bad one, I'd say don't vote for it. I have more than once voted no on someone's local amendments because they're raising taxes or they're putting up stoplight cameras or, you know, something crazy that I don't like. But in this case, I'm not scared of it, and I think you should vote for it. What I understand of it right now, you should. And I say that because all it is in the 19th century, believe it or not. We're talking the 1800s. Congress gave to Alabama certain lands, and parts of those lands were given out to counties. And then those counties then gave lands to school systems. The Franklin County School System now owns 225 acres that is called 16th section land. That's because it came from a 16th section passage from Congress in the 19th century. So like 1875 or something. 225 acres. It's got a lot of value. This land is sitting there right next to Highway 13 that connects Florence to Tuscaloosa, right next to I-22 that connects Memphis to Birmingham. And they can't sell it or lease it or do anything with it because it's bound up in this original provision by which they got it. So the bottom line is, in order to be able to sell the land so that the school system can make some money off of it, because they're thinking right now there might even be a Buc-ee's that wants to come there. That's a huge revenue producer to the area. And they've got land with timber on it, and it just sits there, 225 acres next to the interstate. And all God's children are like, we got to do something with that land. But they can't. I'm telling you right now, the reason why they're doing this is because something's in the works. There's something there that would allow this to be a boon to the local community. And I say go for it. All they want to do is sell their land, but they can't because it's bound up in a provision of our state constitution that protects it. And all they want to do is unwind that so they can sell it. So, all right, you're an outsider looking in, JP. Did I explain it in a way that makes sense?
It does. And I didn't vote on it because, you know, I've already voted via absentee ballot and I didn't know what the heck, you know, it meant. So I try not to vote on anything I'm not actually educated on. But
well, that's
now,
wise.
Yeah. And now hearing the explanation, I think it kind of seems like a formality sort of thing.
It very much is. Yeah. It's a formality. It's really a nuisance.
Yeah.
And it's kind of weird. And I don't know that any other states do it quite this way. But David from Buc-ee's, great question. In fact, somebody asked about it. I think it was yesterday, and I said that I would get to this. So there it is. Amendment 1 on this year's ballot. Every county in the state is going to have an opportunity to vote for what Franklin County cares about. I would say go for it. All you're doing is letting them sell their land and do something with it as opposed to letting it sit there and do nothing. Yay.
And I'm all for more Buc-ee's in Alabama because I love
absolutely.
Yeah, I love me
some Buc-ee's. The irony is that's David from Buc-ee's that sent me the question. But yeah, the article I've got right here says there's even discussion that this may wind up being a ideal location for a truck stop such as Buc-ee's that would provide great help to the local tax base. So yeah, I'm saying give me some of that Buc-ee's.
Yes,
some Beaver Nuggets. Got to have some Beaver Nuggets up in Franklin County.
And that's the one thing I miss about, being at the Cumulus in Huntsville is driving past the Buc-ee's and being able to stop on the way home and get a brisket sandwich. Oh, man.
Okay,
Buc-ee's all right, so good.
So now that we're gonna just slobber on our microphones here, so what is your favorite go-to sandwich at Buc-ee's?
The sliced brisket sandwich.
Brisket. Have you had the dual meat sandwich?
Not at Buc-ee's, no.
Listen, it'll just about make you break out in the meat sweats. just about make you break out in the meat sweats, like through your shirt.
Man, I have to get the pecans, what's it called? The sugar pecans, whatever it's called. Man, those are so good.
Okay, we're going to take a break right now and go find something to eat. All right, we're taking a break. We'll come right back. Talking about the down ballot. All right, now that we talked about the amendment, let's talk about some of the races. And then coming up top of the hour, we'll have congressional candidate Robin Leidecker calling in. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Making common sense like a superpower. All right, so we're in number one of the Triple Dipper. And the down ballot races. I cannot begin to describe to you how important these races are. The presidential gets all the attention, all right? All the oxygen is sucked up by the presidential race. You know, everybody knows where Trump is, where Kamala is, you know, and all. But the end result is those down ballot races will often matter as much as anything to good governance. And I mean that with all sincerity. And it's going to be all the way down to local. I mean, do not forget you got local races in some places. You got statewide races, and you've got county races. And think back to COVID. The epitome of you know, finding out that the wrong people were in the wrong places is what we saw in COVID. How many times did we see a mayor or a city council or a school board? Somebody at the local level that you really begin to realize they either A, have power they shouldn't have, or B, had more power than you thought they ever had, or C, they're just jacked up and shouldn't even be in the job in the first place. And that happens. Listen, elections matter at every level. Work your way all the way to the top to the presidential? Absolutely. But then what happens below that if you don't have the other branches of government if you don't have the other branches of government solidly in place? So right now, we got a number of races, and it's a narrow margin. Y'all all know if it's good in the House, it's not good in the Senate right now because Chuck Schumer is still in charge. We got a narrow majority going in the House. We're literally just down by one vote in the Senate. Really, two when you think about the fact that the vice president is allowed to cast the deciding vote. In the event of a split. But right now, all 435 seats in the U.S. House of Representatives are up for re-election this year, right now. All 435. Bam. Democrats are looking to try and upend those. Right now, we have a 212 to 220 majority. But I just saw a screen a moment ago that seemed to indicate that we believe that what we're going to wind up seeing is a pickup of several seats in the House. Senate races to watch? Well, right now, there's that 51-49 difference. I mean, it's just the narrowest of margins. That's why it was so important to have Joe Manchin with us at times, even as a Democrat. But here's some races that are being talked about as potential decision points. So we got an open seat in Arizona. Kyrsten Sinema decided not to run. So you've got Republican Kari Lake, and you've got Democrat Ruben Gallego. And I'm going to tell you right now, that race is very close, but it's a battleground state, which is leaning towards Trump. And I saw a tweet this morning, but I don't know what to make from it, that seems to indicate that Carrie Lake is doing extremely well here at the tail end of her race. So I don't know yet. We'll wait and see. Arizona could be a pickup. How about Florida? Florida is a decidedly Republican state. We're not going to worry about losing Florida. Florida has been flipped almost entirely to Republican. Senator Rick Scott is the incumbent. He's facing Representative Debbie McCursel Powell, who's got a hyphenated name, so there's that. And she's not going to take him out, so I think that's going to be fine. I'm not going to go through all these, but one of my will is in Michigan. Michigan's a battleground state right now. Michigan is too close to call. They've called it a toss-up state. And right now, one of the toss-up races is former Representative Mike Rogers. They had two Mike Rogers, one from Alabama, one from Michigan. And the current Democrat, Elissa Slotkin, they're running for an open seat. There's no incumbent. It's a battleground state. I think if Trump wins that state, we also win the Senate seat. And that would mean a Republican Mike Rogers coming in, and that would be huge. Montana, I think we're going to win that Montana seat. The Cook Political Report shows that right now is leaning Republican. I think that's a pickup. That's former Navy SEAL veteran Tim Shahey running as a Republican against longtime blowhard Democrat John Tester. And I think we're going to take that seat. Skip on down. I won't go through all these, but in Ohio, you got Sherrod Brown, who's a Democrat, against businessman Bernie Moreno. And that race has now been called a toss-up. So there's potentially two that we could unseat. We're looking at right now, if Kerry Lake wins, that picks up what used to be a Democrat, then an independent. If Mike Rogers wins, that's a former Democrat seat. If Tim Shahey wins, that's a former Democrat seat. If Bernie Moreno wins in Ohio against Sherrod Brown, that's a former Democrat seat. That's four seats right there that are now in the toss-up category. And then you got Pennsylvania. You got Bob Casey, who is the incumbent Democrat, against businessman Dave McCormick, who's a Republican, and that has now been called a toss-up. And by the way, the latest poll I saw said that while Pennsylvania is within the margin of error, that it's leaning Republican. So, again, if Trump wins Pennsylvania, I think we pick up that Senate seat. And that would be an upset, again, taking out a Democrat incumbent. And then you got Wisconsin. Wisconsin is a toss-up. You got Senator Tammy Baldwin, a Democrat. But you got a businessman named Eric Hovde, who is running against her. And that race is also a toss-up. Trump takes Wisconsin. I think we also take that seat. I just gave you right there one, two, three, four, five, six, seven Senate seats where it's now considered too close to call, and it could mean upsetting a former Democrat. If we pick up seven seats in the Senate, y'all, it's a whole new day. And I don't mean like a little bit. I mean like a lot. Meanwhile, watch the House races. So what's happening in the House? Well, we believe we're going to hold on to what we got. But there's some toss-up seats. Alaska, Maine, Pennsylvania, Washington all have toss-up seats right now. If we're leading at 220 to 212 right now, and we can pick up, right now we're looking at there's roughly eight Democrat-held districts that Trump actually won in 2020 that we might flip. If we do that and we're 228, my gosh. If we come in with an eight-seat majority in both houses, House and Senate, I say, wow. Wow, wow, wow. Down ballot. It's huge. All right, we're coming up next. We're going to talk to somebody who's on the down ballot right here in Alabama. Robin Leidecker, running for Congress in Congressional District 7. Bill Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all the issues. And oh yeah, like the dude just said, solid, conservative, and just plain right. Well, welcome to hour number two on this beautiful Thursday. So we're gonna keep talking about the down ballot races. I just spent the last half hour sort of plussing up on why the down ballot is equally as important as what we're seeing in the presidential ticket. Presidential gets all the airtime, it gets all the oxygen. But the truth of the matter is, if we don't win the down ballot races, all the way down to the local level, then we are just setting ourselves up for more difficulty than is necessary. Well, one of the only races, I think, that in the congressional seats in Alabama that has not been on this show is Congressional District 7. And just recently I had an opportunity to meet someone who works in the campaign for our next guest. So our next guest is Dr. Robin Leidecker. Dr. Leidecker is a longtime career educator. She's got degrees from Winthrop College, Montevallo, her doctorate from Samford University. She was a teacher, a principal in Mobile and Hoover City Schools. But she's also been out in the private sector. I mean, she's worked as a COO for a company out of Fairhope. She currently serves as a claims adjuster for an insurance company. I mean, she knows the private sector and the world of public education, and she is running for Congress right now in Congressional District 7 as a Republican against longtime Democrat incumbent Terry Sewell. And I'm telling you right now, that's a key race. We have got to flip every seat. Why not go there, too? And let's bring her on. Dr. Leidecker, how you doing?
Oh, thank you. Just call me Robin, though. I'm doing great. Of course, we're running hard the last few days.
Yeah, I'm sure. You get to sleep next Wednesday, right?
I don't know about that.
Well,
I hope not. I hope we're getting ready to go to Washington next Wednesday.
Well, I hope so, too. That would be huge. And I know that you've got a huge district. People don't realize Congressional District 7 spans a lot of ground. In fact, I was in Tuscaloosa speaking to the local Republican Party when I realized, I don't think I'd even clued in how much of Tuscaloosa County is actually in your congressional district. So tell the audience, if you don't mind, where is your congressional district so they'll know the lay of the land?
Okay. And if I don't go in a certain order, I miss one. It's Pickens, Green, Sumter, Hale, Lowndes, part of Tuscaloosa County, part of Jefferson County, Perry, Dallas, Wilcox, Marengo, part of Clark County, and Choctaw County.
Wow. That's a lot of ground.
13 counties.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I thought that...
And I've been all over it many, many times.
I bet you have. I bet you found places in that district you didn't know existed.
I did. And when we have time, I do want to talk about the district itself. If it's okay, if I go ahead and start,
yeah, I call it
the forgotten district. It's the only district in the state of Alabama that's currently under a Democrat. And I kind of like to compare it to, you know, how we talk about San Francisco and Chicago and some of these cities that are just falling apart because they're under Democratic mayors and governors. Well, District 7 has got the most wonderful, beautiful people in it that have been there for generations, yet there are areas that are literally falling apart.
Yeah.
And Terry Sewell has given it no attention. I mean, she does a real good job. Like right now, she is throwing our taxpayer dollars around. I don't know if you've noticed, a million here, a million there in grants, but she has really left her people out in District 7. And there are three things that I'd like to talk about. One, I got into this because of education. I was a former Alabama State Teacher of the Year, so I've been on more committees and been to more places than I care to talk about. But if you look at District 7, the schools that are failing the most in the state of Alabama are in District 7, and they all have one thing in common. They take the most federal money.
Yeah.
Now, if you look at what's the purpose of federal money, it was originally put in place to help equalize things between the Choctaw counties and the Mountain Brook City Schools. But what it's done instead is it has put our schools under federal control.
Yeah.
And what I mean by that is you're taking that money, so with that money comes mandates. And that means that the teachers can only use certain books. They have to use a certain language. They have to go in a certain order. And you don't have the autonomy as an educator to say, I need that book over there with this child in order for him to learn to read. So I want to do what's called reverse spending. I don't want that money to go away because that's not that. I always love how they act like at the federal level, that's their money. That's not their money. That's our money. And I want that money to start in the local schools and local school systems so those instructional decisions can be made by parents and teachers. Now, I'm saying that first because the economy over in District 7, the unemployment rate and everything is the highest in the state. There are two things that can really move an area. One is education, and the second thing is health care. And right now, they are having, it's like a disaster. Yeah. Over there. I mean, they've got hospitals closing. They're expecting 24 to shut down in the Black Belt in the next 2 or 3 years. Thomasville Hospital recently closed. An example I use a lot that just is heartbreaking was last Christmas, there were two little boys in Pickens County that sat and watched their daddy die. Because it took 45 minutes for an ambulance to get there from Tuscaloosa. They lost their hospital years ago. And then last week, they lost one of the two ambulances that they have. Grove Hill recently lost their critical care unit. They have maternity wards shutting down where women when they go into labor, they're having to drive all the way over to Montgomery. I mean, it is a really, really bad situation.
Well, it
over
is.
There.
And Robin, let me jump in before we run out of time and just ask you. I mean, you are talking about the Forgotten District. I mean, it's a crying shame because there's some not only beautiful people, but there's some beautiful land. I mean, it's an area that's rich in potential. And it's always been sort of marginalized in terms of its ability to exceed that or to reach that potential. What is it that got you to run for Congress? Let me just ask that flat out. What got you to look at this and go, I am tired of this. It's time for me to run. What prompted it?
Well, I have lived in District 7 for over 30 years. And I'm just sick and tired of not having any representation. And then, like I said, the more I've traveled, originally it was for education because I know our kids are just as smart as anyone else's. But then the more I traveled, I see these sewage issues, yeah. People that still have straight line piping, you know, the mountains of trash coming from 32 other states. You know, I'm sorry, I appreciate the time you're giving me, but I could go on and on and on. And I know as a congresswoman, I haven't mentioned world peace. You know, I haven't mentioned the national issues. But, you know, these people get up in the morning and the first thing they think about is, how am I going to feed myself? So, you know, that's why I spend a lot of time talking about the issues within the district.
No, I think that's the way to go. I mean, they say all politics is local, and in reality, it still is. And while there may be things that happen on the national level that some people have the luxury of looking at and sort of, you know, engaging in, truth be told, if you're not secure in where you live, and if you don't have the things you need for your day-to-day, then that winds up being, that's your kitchen table politics right there.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And you know, and the garbage issue that President Trump, you know, they called us all garbage. Well, I got a big mountain of garbage they can go look at that one Democrat has caused to be there. So, you know, the people, I feel good because, like the other, last week I had three or four calls from Marion, Alabama, just people I had met. There were areas of that town that went without water for 5 days.
Right, right.
Those people are having to buy every bit of water on a daily basis that they drink and that they cook with. And then not to have it at all for 5 days. I mean, it's to me like Flint, Michigan.
Yeah.
But nobody knows about it because they don't have a voice.
It's third world. I mean, it literally is unfortunately true that, and I've heard before that Terry Sewell likes to focus on her Jefferson County portion and that the rest of the district doesn't usually see her. And I think that's probably the case.
Yeah. There are people down there, they have never seen her. When she does go down there, it's a very controlled setting. And, you know, I do live in Jefferson County, and we've got issues up here and that aren't being addressed in areas like over in West Jefferson and, Fairfield. And Fairfield's a lovely place. The smaller communities, Bessemer, the crime in Birmingham.
Yeah.
And it is just a mess all over.
Well, it is. But I think it's important, and we're about out of time here now, but I think it's important that folks recognize they've got a Republican in this race. And it is too often the forgotten district. It's almost like too many politicos go ahead and look aside because they don't even think of this as one where Republicans are going to do well. But I got news. I was a county chairman in Etowah County. We used to be 100% Democrat. And by the time my tenure as the chairman was over, we had flipped every single seat in our county. It's an entirely red county now. And that can be done just county by county, seat by seat, race by race. And I'm just glad you're in it.
Well, and I appreciate that. And I'm not in it for a career. This is my public service, and I'm ready to have people in office that have the right morals, the right values, the right outlook. I am there to serve a purpose, not as a career.
Well, and I think that's also appreciated. Listen, we gotta call it, but if folks want to find out more about you, you got a website you want to tell us about real quick?
Yeah, it's www.leidekerforcongress.com, and I have a Facebook page, Leideker for Congress, and Instagram, and
that's Leideker, Litaker, correct?
Litaker, yes.
All right. Robin, thank you. Good luck to you, and we'll catch up with you again sometime soon, all right?
All right. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye. All right, listen, I ran long because I just wanted to give her an opportunity. Listen, you run a race, you run to win. And I don't hear any give up in that race right there. And I think it's fair for people to understand you've got a Republican running in a huge swath of this listening area who needs people to turn out and vote. Turn out and vote. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back.